You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we podcast without pants. Seriously, I'm not wearing any pants right now. Actually, I don't have any, I don't have a shirt on either. So, welcome to the midside, where we podcast half naked. Alright. So, I did a little research this week into this whole mystery box phenomenon that I've seen popping up all over social media and all over Google ads. This is basically where you pay for a subscription monthly to a box that they send you that has assorted goods in it. But you don't know what the goods are in it. And that's what confuses me about it. What is the value of these mystery boxes? I'm going to read a text message that I sent to Daniel this week about this phenomenon. Ahem. Why the fuck would you pay money every month to potentially get shit you don't want? You like surprise? Surprise! You want a Hulk spatula, which will always remind you that you're a poor spender. I just don't understand it. Maybe somebody out there can explain it to me, but I like to buy things and say, hey, I know what I'm buying and that was a worthwhile investment. I'm sure every once in a while you get something worthwhile in the box. Otherwise, seems like a waste of money. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How are you, Daniel?
I'm alright. I'm not entirely opposed to the mystery box concept, except that what I see out there are things like mystery box for horror fans, which I think is, why would you want to continually get a box of things that have blood on them? Or mystery box for nerds. Can't they just have a general mystery box? Like, you can send me anything you want every month?
I think the general mystery box is trademarked by J.J. Abrams, which is why they can't do that. But yes, that's part of what I'm objecting to with this whole phenomenon, is it's how much, there's like a Marvel subscription box, which, yeah, they sent out this really cool Hulkbuster 6-inch pulp vinyl, which I ended up buying off of eBay, and that's really cool. But you're telling me they're going to send you something that cool every month? How much Marvel merchandise can you get?
Yeah, how much is out there that is good? I mean, the vast majority of it has to be, you know, shitty.
Exactly. Also joining us this week, via Skype, from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you, Elliot?
I'm fine with boxes as long as Gwyneth Paltrow's head's not in any of them.
Really? I wouldn't think the gay guy would be fine with boxes.
That wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't shock me. Hey, Justin?
Yeah?
Let's talk about your column. It was really good.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Go ahead. Say what you have to say about it. You can do the plugging so I don't look like I'm arrogant and self-centered.
If you have not been over to the Facebook page or to the Midside website, it's actually the 100th post on the Midside website, correct?
That is correct.
That's correct. So make sure you guys get over there and read it. It's a really, really great piece because I know a lot of listeners might be sick of hearing about Tom Brady, which is impossible, but it might happen. It might be true. But definitely get over there and read it, even if you're not a Pats fan, because it's much more than just about Tom Brady and about the Patriots. It's much more about our culture and its view of heroes and the possibility of being heroes. And I think that we, as a culture, can be complicit in what's happening in regards to heroes, like Tom Brady or Zack Snyder and other people. So yeah. Definitely check it out. It's a great...
Thank you, Elliot. I appreciate that. And what it's really about is what you just said, is me learning the fact that if I don't speak out and I don't tell people about this, I'm basically being complicit in this attack on a hero, this destruction of a hero, and destruction of heroes in our culture in general. And it's all about how I came to that realization. And, it's like a famous Rand quote. In any compromise between food and poison, the only winner can be death. Speaking of things you're probably not interested but need to know about, it's time for The News with Daniel T. Richards.
Canadian lesbians hate jewelers.
Like I said, things you probably don't care about.
At least that's what I got from this article from CBC News.
Wait, I have a question. It says jewelers, not Jews, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, basically the same thing.
Strong correlation there.
Yeah, pretty close to one-to-one. So the same-sex couple from Canada is upset after discovering the jewelry store that sold them their engagement rings has posted a sign that seems to oppose same-sex marriage, but one of the store owners says he's allowed to post his religious beliefs. So basically this lesbian couple was looking for engagement rings, they couldn't find one they liked, so they went to the store and had them custom made, and they loved them, the store owner made them, it was all happy and wonderful. Then they go home and tell their other lesbian friends about it. Their other lesbian friends go in to get rings made. And oh my god, there's a sign in the store now that says, the sanctity of marriage is under attack. Meaning, of course, a marriage between a man and a woman. And so these other lesbians go home and tell their first friends. And the first friends go back and say, you better give us our money back for our rings because you're an evil bigot who decided to serve us. And that's where it gets funny.
Mm-hmm. Are we sure the sanctity of marriage just isn't their clan name in World of Warcraft?
Maybe.
Or maybe it's their horse, that their racing horse, because racing horses tend to have weird names like that.
Mm-hmm. And so there's like a serial horse killer, is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. So instead of American Hero at Belmont, it'll be the sanctity of marriage won the Triple Crown today.
I thought Seabiscuit was about a horse killer, no?
Horse killer?
A killer horse. You're really stretching, Justin. I was going to try to keep improving, but I just decided, no, fuck you. That was terrible.
You got to do that to me sometimes.
So here's the thing about this. They can't get their money back for the rings because the rings were personalized. They were engraved with their names, and so clearly the resale value on that goes to basically zero, and that's the store's policy. It always has been, so they're not singling anyone out. And the couple argues that their rings are tainted, that they'll never be able to look at their rings again without thinking of bigotry. So here's my thing. Go fuck yourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My thing is, won't they look at the rings and think of retarded bigotry? Because if you really believe that the sanctity of marriage is being threatened by gay marriage, wouldn't you vet your clientele and make sure you're not making rings for a homosexual couple? Like, you have to be protecting it in the most retarded way.
But, I mean, look, this is the thing, right? Like, the guy clearly knew they were lesbians. They said they didn't hide it and that they kissed. Like, he made them the rings. Like, these may be his personal beliefs. That a man and a woman, marriage should be between a man and a woman, but he clearly wasn't discriminating against them because of it. He actually made them the rings, and he would have made the rings for the other lesbian friends if they wanted it.
But what you don't realize is, in 5 years, they will both die from the slow-acting poison that he put in the rings when he personalized them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Canadian poison.
They said tainted. They said tainted, right?
Yes, they did say tainted.
Up in his taint, like he slipped them up.
Wow, I was resisting that joke.
So this is sort of a non-story story. I mean, it's been making the rounds and it's gotten a lot of attention. But I don't understand who actually thinks the jeweler is at fault here, because what did he actually do?
Well, he actually made the rings, which is. I mean, it's this whole story is just stupid, and I write this off as stupid shit that only happens in Canada and not here. Well, it could very well happen here.
No, it does happen here.
It does happen here. But no, I mean, because here we fight for a person's right to not do this, to not bake a cake or do a floral arrangement or anything like that, which they absolutely should have the right to refuse that service for whatever reason, religious or not, because we believe in property rights. But in Canada, this story is ridiculous because he actually made the rings. He actually did what they paid him to do. And what does it matter? Because to me, if you think that the rings are tainted, which implies some kind of mystical gobbledygook kind of thing going on, that's your problem. You have control over how you feel about things. And if that taints your, first of all, if you claim to love each other and you're going to say that this, you can't look at your rings without thinking about the fact that you love each other and that you're committed to each other and you're married together, all of that is outweighed by this guy's opinion, then, you know, maybe you shouldn't be getting married.
Oh, pulling out the big guns.
But here's the thing, what we've opened ourselves up to. Because I did say in the opening about the compromise between food and poison. And that's what people are going to say is, this is them compromising, and they didn't realize they were compromising, and because they realized it now, it makes them feel bad, and they were basically sold an incorrect thing. Because they're going to say, well, what's the difference between what I'm saying about Tom Brady and what these women are saying about these rings that were sold to them? Do you see how that's the line of argumentation people will take?
Sure, no, I don't.
But it's not, look, here's the thing. Like, how far do you take this in your life? Do every time you interact with another human being, do you have to know everything they've ever said, thought, or done in their entire life? And if you find one thing that you find morally objectionable, you have to say, nope, can't do it, can't interact with you in any way, can't buy from you, can't look at you, can't support you.
Yes, this is what we saw last week with the whole discussion of quote-unquote rape culture and pop punk, where these bands, because this kid had a fucked up encounter that he made a huge mistake in, whether it was rape or not, sexual assault or not, that's a legal definition, but whether it was or not, we were supposed to not only boycott that kid, but all the bands on his label, all the people who have ever supported him and ever friended him ever. This is what social justice warriors want. On Facebook today, I had a friend post about how he read a status of somebody else, and the status of somebody else was complaining about how transgender has become this agenda in the media, and they're trying to normalize it, and they shouldn't normalize something that's a defect and a mental issue. And this person who posted this said, whose friend posted this, shared it and said, everyone needs to defriend this person immediately because such bigotry should not be allowed and is not healthy. And a bunch of people responded and cheered him on and said, yeah, you're right. It's good that we defriend this person. He's a jerk. So, yeah, they want 100% compliance. They want 100% obedience.
It's just, I can't imagine, like, I'm an Apple fanboy, but Al Gore is on their board, and they really like this environmentalist nonsense stuff. So I guess I should fucking boycott Apple, because that doesn't fall into my moral belief. But hey, I'll go buy an IBM. Oh, except that they're 20 times worse. So fuck, I'll go buy a Dell. Oh, except that they're about 30,000 times worse. Like, where, I couldn't actually own a computer if I held this standard.
Right, you couldn't.
There used
do
to be a time in America where we just bought a hamburger from McDonald's. We didn't care what their stance on sexual human trafficking was. Okay? We just wanted a fucking cheeseburger.
Well, there is a difference, right? If sexual human trafficking was how they made their money, that's different.
But, right. No, I agree. But, now we want to know, like, McDonald's, what are you doing to stop human trafficking?
Right. We saw this with Chick-fil-A, where everyone was supposed to stop eating at Chick-fil-A, even though they make delicious sandwiches, because they're Christian.
I don't eat at Chick-fil-A because it's a little pricier than the other places.
Well, that's true. But that's because they have to make up for the fact that they're not open on Sunday. They lose the whole day of the week.
Yeah.
That's the Sunday tax.
I thought it was the delicious, juicy chicken tax.
But the point is, judge people who you're doing business with based on their services and how they create their services, not everything they do in their entire life. This is actually something that a therapist even talked to me about. It's okay to just be friends with people in different ways. You don't have to be a complete friend with everyone.
Yeah.
So when you're doing business with someone, you don't have to be a complete friend with them. Your jeweler doesn't have to be your best friend. Does he make the best goddamn ring? Will he sell it to you? Good. As long as he's not out there fucking killing babies, what's your problem?
Yeah, well, I think some people prefer he'd be killing babies, but yeah. No, it's all a good point.
Is that a plug for the Kermit Gosnell film? Is that what that was?
What? No, I was making
Oh, gosh. Wow.
I was making a very silly abortion joke.
Well, that's why I got to Kermit Gosnell.
Yes. Wow.
Next story.
Insert transition here. Speaking of other terrible things that happen in Canada... Is that a good transition?
Yeah, that's a good one.
the National
Drew,
Post.
We blame you, Drew.
Reports.
This is the Blame Drew edition.
Yes. Fucking Drew and your Canadian-ness. Becoming disabled by choice, not chance. Trans-abled people feel like imposters in their fully working bodies. So before we continue here, that title was exactly what it sounds like. People literally choosing to disable themselves for the sake of how they feel. Okay? Just let that sink in a little bit. When he cut off his right arm with, quote, a very sharp power tool, a man who now calls himself One Hand Jason let everyone believe it was an accident. But he had for months tried different means of cutting and crushing the limb that never quite felt like his own, training himself on first aid so he wouldn't bleed to death, even practicing on animal parts sourced from a butcher. Quote, my goal was to get the job done with no hope of reconstruction or reattachment, and I wanted some method that I could actually bring myself to do. Okay. His goal was to become disabled, and people like Jason are now being classified as trans-abled.
I must have read the article.
Yeah?
He calls himself one-armed Jason?
One-hand Jason.
But whatever it is, he goes around calling himself that. Like, hi, I'm One Hand Jason.
I say all the seven C's. What are you? No.
He waves his ghost hand at you. I'm One Hand Jason.
I mean, I don't like the label trans-able because it sounds like he's like. I mean, when you talk about transgender, you're talking about one gender, one person who's in one body of one sex, but he's actually in the sex. Another gender mind, I still have to wrap my head around that. But here, I mean, it's literally going from an ability to a disability. So is trans-abled really the correct word for this?
But the reason they're using it is the reason that transgender people use it. And I'm not equating them morally, so please stop writing your hate mail.
Hey, Peacock, Elliot. Knock it off.
Elliot.
Peacock, knock it off.
Yeah, the reason they use it is because it's about how the person feels on the inside. So that's the correlation, I think. So with transgender, people feel on the inside as if they were supposed to be another sex. As if they were supposed to have been born a woman or been born a man. And in this sense, the people who want to be transabled feel as if they were supposed to have been born disabled. They feel like a foreigner in their own body.
I feel like I was supposed to be born rich. I'm trans wealthy. Why won't no one recognize my real status? No one will legitimize how I feel on the inside. I am trans wealthy.
It's true. I think the government should just dump $1 billion on your front porch so that you can actualize your transness.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make this happen now. This is the thing, America. The world. Sorry, this is the internet. This is the thing, the world.
Sorry, I had this really stupid thought of a frat guy telling his girlfriend after a disappointing night of sex. Well, yeah, well, I'm trans-hung. I feel like I was supposed to be born 10 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're trans-black, you mean?
I didn't want to go racial, but sure. Mm-hmm. So this is a thing now, and this article is about what's going on in the humanities, and the whole point of this is that the humanities, especially feminist studies, are starting to study transability, as they call it. And
wait, isn't transability the ability to get around town quickly? Like, haven't they changed the meaning of the word at this point?
Transitability? I don't know.
Transitability.
And so they are trying to legitimize this, trying to bring it mainstream and say that it's not weird or abnormal.
So what's transportation? Is that like when you feel like you were born to carry stuff? Like,
I don't know, and I don't know how far you take this.
Wait. Like, does this mean the transporter movies with Jason Statham actually have this like double meaning, and they're this like deeply social justice movies?
Oh yes. No! Don't do that! Don't do that! Not to the transporter movies. They're like good. So good, except for the third one, but the others are good.
I feel like I was born to kill people. You know what I mean?
I did not know until I read this article that this was a thing. So I'm at work and I'm talking about it with some of my more, put it politely, some more socially conscious, kind of left-wing people. you know, at work, and they're, and I'm bringing, I'm reading the article to them in the break room. They're just looking at me like they are so not surprised. They're like, "Well, of course, you didn't know this." I'm like, "No, I've never heard of this. Like, people, no, this is a thing." And they're like, "Yes, this is a thing. People just feel like they don't have the limbs that they're supposed to have, or da da da." And I'm just like, "Wait, are you telling me you guys knew about this? You've known about this for a while?" Like, "Yes, of course. You haven't known about this?" So, you know, screw you guys, trans ableists. You know,
first of all, I love how they sound like Oliver Platt.
Feel out of the loop.
Second off, are you sure they weren't just pretending to appear socially conscious? Because that's what these people do a lot.
They knew. Like, they were, I mean, she was, one of them especially, but she was talking about speakers that she had heard in, like, college that were talking about this. So this is something, and this speaks to a much broader issue. This speaks to how left-wing colleges have become. Because these kind of speakers and authority, and keep in mind, according to the article, they don't really have a trans-ableist community here in America. The preponderant, dominant populations, which is about 0.004, isn't it, of the population of the world, is like in Germany and Sweden and Canada. So they don't even have a significant population here in the States.
Well, to be fair, anyone in Germany who's not born like 6'5" with hulking muscles and blonde hair and blue eyes is trans-abled. So,
well, they're considered deficient. Yeah. So, I mean, this speaks to the fact that it's such a small group of people in the world. You know, and listen, I believe in body autonomy. I don't agree with you lopping off your limbs because you feel like you shouldn't have one, but it's your body. You have autonomy over your body. And, you know, if you feel like that's what you need for you to be happy, then, I mean, I'll just, you know, not say, I won't stop you. I'm not going to go to the government and say, "Hey, ban this."
Isn't body autonomy just called botonomy?
Botonomy.
But here's the thing. Of course, I won't go to the government and say they should force you to stop doing this, although I would look at a doctor who decided to do this with my scornful eyes, which are, I keep on my desk next to my inquisitive eyes.
Because you had those taken out, you hypocritical bastard.
Exactly, but now I have super eyes. But the question culturally and from the shows.
Hold on a second. Hold on before you go into that. You're right. But what you just said, wouldn't that be what trans-abled means? If you like, what about people who get LASIK to improve their eyesight? Aren't they trans-abled? No, I'm 100% serious. Wouldn't that be the real definition of trans-abled? Someone who can't see, or like my dad who's currently going through surgery where he might need cornea transplants because he's going blind. Isn't that what trans-abled is? But no, there are people out there who are trying to punch themselves in the eye and be blind.
No, because you're not going from a disability to an ability. Like when you get LASIK, I mean, if you are losing eyesight, that's a disability. You're working to restore that ability. We're talking here about people who are able, physically able, and trying to become disabled.
But Jordy LaForge in First Contact, isn't he trans-abled because he couldn't see his whole life and then they gave him transplants and he could see? Isn't he trans-abled?
No, because he was disabled. They gave him, so now he's able.
Yeah, that's saying in the objective definition of the word, Elliot, I understand the way they're perverting it, but I'm saying shouldn't trans-abled mean going from a negative to a positive?
That's what I would think.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting. Get like a bionic laser arm.
Yes, the bionic woman. Isn't she trans-abled? Aren't all superheroes trans-abled?
Yeah, I like it.
You can't ask them for an objective definition, Justin. You know better than that.
Daniel had a point.
Gracious.
I had a point like a half hour ago. Don't worry about it.
Delineate where the line is or what the standards are. There aren't any.
Daniel, what's your point?
That's my point. My point is the question that Elliot was just asking. Like, culturally speaking, from the show's standpoint, like, where do we draw the line at acceptance? Because we're in this era of we have to accept everything, like, no matter how different we think it is from ourselves or what our evaluation is, we have to accept it. We have to be tolerant. We're getting this with the transgender movement, and maybe there is something there to be accepting of, but do we have to be accepting of the trans-abled movement?
The trans-wealthy movement?
The trans-wealthy movement, the trans-black movement. Where do we legitimately draw the line and say, no, I don't have to be tolerant of this from a cultural standpoint. This is immoral or disgusting.
By the way, Michael Jackson was on the forefront of the trans race movement.
It's true. He went from a poor black boy to a rich white woman.
Right.
So,
Anyway, the point is, help me actualize myself and feel, like, look on the outside and live on the outside as I am, on feel on the inside, and help recognize my trans wealthy status and make that a reality. That's the takeaway from this story.
Yeah, yeah, that and people like my grandfather who did have a corneal transplant and then had better eyesight than I did, he was trans-abled.
That's right. He was trans-abled, 100%. I agree.
Fantastic. You know who's not trans-abled? College professors. I don't know.
That's more the college students that aren't.
Yeah, that was a terrible transition. But I guess speaking of feeling on the inside and feelings ruling all, I guess that's a better transition.
One feeling to rule them all.
An article really made the rounds this week. It's been shared a lot of times on Facebook, according to this, called I'm a Liberal Professor and My Liberal Students Terrify Me. So by a professor who decided to remain anonymous at a mid-sized state school. He's been teaching.
Just to be clear, he said mid-size, not mid-side state school. Mid-size.
Yeah, we're not quite
trendy yet.
Yeah. So he's basically been teaching for a long time, and he's seen a lot of classes come and go. He says he's a liberal, and he's conscientious about his students' emotional well-being and all this nonsense.
Because only liberals are conscientious of their student well-being. Just to be clear.
Conservatives don't care. Yeah, conservatives don't care about your students' well-being.
Yeah.
Presumption.
Fuck you, students. So then he says, quote, things have changed as I started teaching. The vibe is different. I wish there was a less blunt way to put this, but my students sometimes scare me, particularly the liberal ones. Not like in a person-by-person sense, but students in general. The student-teacher dynamic has been re-envisioned along a line that's simultaneously consumerist and hyper-protective, giving each and every student the ability to claim grievous harm in nearly any circumstance after any affront, and a teacher's formal ability to respond to these claims is limited at best. So he goes on in this rather lengthy Vox article to discuss basically the concept of any topic whatsoever that causes a student discomfort, like emotional discomfort, is considered an attack on that student nowadays by the student. And basically that the standard of value, or sorry, the standard that they used to evaluate any given topic or subject area or story is their own personal emotional response. And so he's found himself cutting out controversial topics like abortion. And he's a liberal, by the way, abortion, because even bringing up the notion means in the student's mind that it's up for, like, debate, and thus the teacher is perpetuating an evil and needs to be stifled. So this frightens me, too, and I'm not a liberal professor.
Because here's the thing. I would say that this is well beyond college. I mean, we see this in the way people respond to movies.
Yep.
TV shows, music, and how about this? The way people interact with each other.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even like Gamergate, that's everything that we talked about, and when we talked about Gamergate last year, I mean, that's premised on this. People that are seeding their way into other areas of interest, film, television, athletics, and they're kind of bringing this social justice mentality with them as they kind of snake their way into these other fields.
Yeah. I think the key quote in this article that summarizes everything it's about is this, quote, so it's not just that students refuse to countenance uncomfortable ideas. They refuse to engage them, period. Engagement is considered unnecessary as the immediate emotional reactions of students contain all the analysis and all the judgment that sensitive issues demand.
Right, and the way this manifests when they're, you know, they're interacting with people is the person they're interacting with, if they say something without realizing that quote-unquote triggers them, and this is where triggers came from, they just dismiss you as a bad person, even if it wasn't your intent or not.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the thing that he's not talking about is I actually think it goes a step beyond this. It's not just about shutting down the conversation. It's about demonizing the other thing, too. You can't just say, oh, I don't want anything to do with this person, or, oh, that's not something I want in my life. You have to say, they're a bad person as well. I mean, isn't this what the girls were doing with the rings?
Yeah.
The lesbian story?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
It's the thought that a person's belief could can impact you in a deep way, like in a deep, meaningful way. Instead of just having the maturity to say, you know what, you believe what you believe, I'll believe what I believe, and never the twain needs to meet. That's what it should be.
What does Mark Twain have to do with anything?
Everything. He's in everything.
Mm-hmm. Huck wrote that racist book, you know, Huck Finn or something. Here's the thing. To me, there is a connection between this story and the transabled story, which is we are at a point in our culture that only what you feel matters. Facts don't matter. Reality doesn't matter. Other people actually don't matter. Only what you feel on the inside, that is what is real and true and good, and that is what should be countenanced above all else.
And I feel wealthy. Make me wealthy. I demand it.
Yeah. And I think this is scary because emotions aren't a method for looking at the world. They're not a method for understanding anything. They're just a method of understanding a little bit about yourself. And that's it. So, I don't know. These kids these days.
Seriously.
You know what they all are? Rude. What? And whenever possible, you should eat the rude. It's time for TV with JML. Following up on last week, the man who, of course, whenever possible, eats the rude is Hannibal, and the season 3 premiere happened, and I thought it was phenomenal. You guys probably haven't watched it, right?
Not at all.
No. So it sort of took this show to a new level, where in the first two seasons it was sort of like a twist on a procedural, but it became this whole new level where this first episode was just focusing on Hannibal and his journey to create a new identity and continue his lifestyle in Europe. Started in Paris, had a little bit there, and then it had a bunch in Italy. And it didn't satisfy any of the cliffhangers from the season 2 finale. That's going to come later. But it just focused on that. So it actually became a drama about portraying evil in the way it exists. And here's the thing that's most interesting to me. In my pre-show research, I found an interview with Brian Fuller where they talked to him about this, about how the show is becoming the series he's always wanted to make. And this is the quote he said about this. Now, this is going to set off a bunch of bells and whistles for people who have been following us for a while. The context of the show being a crime procedural was always a loose one. And I really always felt the show was a romantic horror. And I feel like this season, more than any other, fully embraces those elements of romantic horror.
Those are some key words.
That's a big key word, though.
It is.
It is.
The fact that someone is self-aware of them making romanticism says something.
Yeah. It's out and out rare for artists to even understand sort of romantic at all, like just know what it is. And then talk about an added level of rarity for someone to say, I'm making something that's romantic. That's kind of incredible nowadays.
And how did I pitch the show to you last week? Didn't I pitch it as romanticism?
Yeah, romanticism and cannibalism, yes.
Well, I mean, that's what it pretty much is. I mean, that's the description of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
you said to open up a nice Chianti and cook some fava beans.
Right. So unfortunately, we take what we can get nowadays. Would ideally the best romantic show, arguably on television, be about a cannibal? No, but that's what one of our romanticists is making these days. So I would urge people to watch it. And I also texted you, Daniel, another quote this week from a different interview with Brian Fuller, where he also said something that people will see if you followed our Snyder series. This is very similar to something Zack Snyder said about his art. So this is Brian Fuller. My role as a showrunner is to want to watch the show we're creating. Now, this is, of course, similar to Snyder's quote where he said he makes films for himself. He makes films he wants to watch.
It's interesting.
It's awesome. I think that there's no better way to do anything.
Well, I think that's I remember reading an interview with a screenwriter, and I cannot for the life of me remember who it was. But they said that one of the big mistakes, probably the top mistake that aspiring screenwriters make, and I imagine filmmakers make, is that they never put themselves in the position of the audience to see, you know, if they're bored or not. Like, they never measure whether an audience is going to be entertained or if they're going to be bored by what they're seeing.
See, it's interesting to me because I do that naturally. When I'm writing, if I get to a point where I'm stuck, I go, well, what would be interesting to happen next? What would I want to see happen next? Or if I'm writing a scene and it's not interesting, I'll go, this is boring, and I'll delete it. But I always use that measure where I say what's interesting, because how do you use a measure of that? I mean, this goes to what Daniel was just saying about all the feelings as cognition and everything. If you're judging off of how other people are going to react, you can never predict that. There are too many variables. So doesn't a true artist have to be able to have a finely tuned sense of what's good or bad or not and trust that and have themselves be the primary audience? There's no other way, is there, to make good art?
Yeah, I agree. It's funny, I'm looking up a little bit about Brian Fuller as we're talking, and he's doing an interview about horror, and someone asked him, you know, if there's things, like, horrible that he would show, like rape or whatever, and he says, we won't tell a rape story on Hannibal. If it's too real, it's no fun for me. I'm very sensitive. The horror that we do on the show has a heightened quality to it, and I kind of need that vibrating above reality sense in order to enjoy the work and have fun with it. If it's too real, then it's not as much fun.
By real, I imagine he means naturalistic.
Right. That's exactly what he means. Because, look, here's the thing. It is about cannibalism, but it's not like they're showing him. I mean, even Dexter was more naturalistic with the way it portrayed Dexter killing people, and in the opening credits it showed him eating stuff. It's not portraying Hannibal, you know, as eating people and everything. It's more like it's a manifestation of his evil. And they show it as such. How somebody who is so good at, you know, he's a wonderful cook and he's very talented and knowledgeable. Someone so smart and talented could do something so gruesome. That's how it's used. They don't often show him actually cooking people and everything. They show, and Daniel, here's another thing that's going to make you want to watch this. Eddie Izzard is in this show. And they didn't show him cutting up Eddie Izzard, but they showed him sitting there at the table, and they implied that he was trying to make Eddie Izzard eat himself.
Right.
Which is, that's more, the reason that's more gruesome is it makes you picture it and makes you picture the implications.
Yeah, it's almost visually anthematic in a sense where it implies and allows you to fill in what is most horrifying to you. That's the best kind of horror.
Right, and he was actually, you know, defending Game of Thrones for that, where he talked about with the whole rape thing, the whole recent thing with Sansa we talked about. And he said it was good, he loved the way it was done because they didn't actually show it, because they implied it. In the same sense when, you know, we talked about the torture of Theon, I think the reason people didn't respond to that as horrifically is you saw a lot of the torture. You saw him being whipped. You saw him being degraded week after week. So when it's right there in front of you, there's nowhere to go with it in your mind. Whereas with the stuff with Sansa, it's all implied. You don't ever see it directly. Now with Theon, you never saw his dick get cut off directly. So that was horrific to me, just thinking about that. But that's because they can't show it. They probably would have if they could have.
Well, it calls to mind something that once said about Pulp Fiction, that Pulp Fiction has this reputation of being a very violent movie, but in fact, there's not that much violence on screen. It's really the buildup of the tension until it's released in an act of violence. So oftentimes, it's the buildup and those moments before, the suspense that rises before it happens, that really makes an impact on the audience.
Right, and another movie that does that very well is 28 Days Later. It's not like a gory zombie film. There are some moments of gore in it, but the main thing that makes that movie horrific is the tone and the atmosphere, because you're anticipating the whole time and you're thinking, what are the implications of living in this world?
Yeah, it's a good point. So I'm gonna watch it. You've convinced me. Jesus.
Yes. Now, the one thing I will urge you is it does start off a little slow, but it's getting and better. So it's, it's worth sticking around with.
That's the worst kind of show.
Daniel has the attention span of a 2-year-old sometimes.
I know he does, and it's tough because the more intellectual shows are like that, because Brian Fuller, he loves taking his time the way Hannibal loves taking his time.
Ooh. I want to be scarfing down popcorn within the first 48 seconds.
See, this is what the modern action movie has done, where everything has to start with this epic action scene.
It doesn't have to be an epic action scene, but it has to be gripping really quickly. For their instance, Fize and I watched the first episode of Netflix's new crazy series, Sense8, which is by the Wachowski siblings. I mean, it opens up like with this slow scene of a woman getting up off a mattress that takes for fucking ever. Horrible. Horrible. Also, the show is basically just an ad for like the United Colors of Benetton. It's just diversity after more diversity after more diversity for diversity's sake.
Well, you know, the Wachowski brothers had to redeem themselves after Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure this is going to redeem them.
I meant with the liberals. I have no idea what Jupiter Ascending was about. I just know it bombed.
No. It was kind of actually about how evil corporations are, but, you know. Anyway.
Well, let's talk about some things we won't be watching. Sharknado 3, the teaser was released. Any thoughts on Sharknado 3?
I actually might watch this one.
What? Oh, is it because of the cast? Because we've got Mark Cuban as the president and Ann Coulter as the vice president?
That's part of it. But it's in D.C., so.
Well, it says this time the airborne sharks are set to cause mass destruction on Washington, D.C. before heading down the eastern seaboard and into Florida. And actually, in the opening of the teaser, you see the Universal Studios glow.
Yes! They filmed it here in my hometown.
Okay, so then you have to confirm something for me, Elliot. One of my favorite nerdcore rappers has a song. It was about snakes on a plane, except he called it a sequel to Snakes on a Plane, and he called it Sharks on a Roller Coaster. Did they film Sharks on a Roller Coaster for this movie?
Shark? I don't know. I mean, they might have.
That's what I told him. I posted on his wall. I said, alert, there's a high probability of Sharks on a Roller Coaster in this movie.
Oh, I'm sure there will be. I don't know. I mean, like the first one, there were sharks swimming on top of buildings, on helicopter, you know, rooftop landing pads. I mean, it was ridiculous and stupid. But love it. I will always have a special place in my heart for it.
When the shark dropped into the lap of the Lincoln Memorial, I thought that was awesome. So, I'm going to have to watch this.
And the good thing about, I remember the first Sharknado movie, it was right in the middle of the election season, and it was great because on Twitter, liberals and conservatives, you know, all these people that have been yelling at each other and insulting each other all season long, it was like they were all kind of just watching the movie at the same time, and they were kind of just tweeting jokes at each other, and, you know, everybody was kind of going, and I remember watching, like, wow, you know, that's a really impressive thing that even bad entertainment is capable of. You know, you can kind of, it helps to kind of soothe the political tensions and workplace stress related stuff, and everyone can just kind of enjoy it. It was really cool.
It's interesting you should say that, because our next story is all about a government trying to use entertainment to soothe political wounds. Over Variety, they have an article, Palestinian government launching TV channel aimed at Israeli Arabs, which you don't hear that very often, Israeli Arabs. This is what it says. The Palestinian Authority, the governing body for Palestinians in the West Bank, is launching a new television station with programming designed specifically for Arab residents of Israel. The station, dubbed F48, will feature cultural and social programming, but with a distinctly political slant. Its name is short for... Is that say Palestine? Because it... I want to read it Palestine. Like, Palestine.
That's the Arabic word for Palestine.
Okay. 1948. The Arabic word for Palestine. Yes, as the...
were going to do that, which is why I did it. That's fucking awesome.
You just socially engineered the podcast. Good job. In the year of Israel's founding, which Palestinians refer to as the Nakba, so General Akbar, apparently, catastrophe, as it marked the beginning of the displacement of the Palestinian people. So what do you guys think? Are you buying this? Are you selling this? Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Are people going to tell us we need to start watching F-48 in the same way after 9/11 they said we have to watch Al Jazeera to get both sides of the story?
Oh, fucking Al Jazeera is horrible. All I knew is that when you send me an article whose first three words are Palestinian government launching, I don't think the next phrase is TV channel.
Yeah.
You have to consider the source. It's Variety. Consider that.
Also, the word aimed is in the title. I think that's very deliberate.
Oh, definitely.
It's propaganda. It's going to be propaganda. I have no doubt that this is just supposed to create discord among the Israeli Arabs, who have full... By the way, just in case there's any person out there who's completely ignorant, they have full citizenship and rights in Israel, and they can go around freely and work, but they feel in their hearts as if they're members of two families.
They're trans-Arab.
Or trans-Israeli, depending on how you look at it. Yeah. This is just going to be shitty. And although I look forward to seeing some of the things on YouTube, because I'm sure they will be drop-dead hilarious.
Don't you want to see the Palestinian version of The Apprentice, where when you get fired, they cut your head off?
Yes, or the Palestinian Breaking Bad, where the guy's crime is like, he's smoking pork in his RV.
The Palestinian Bachelor, where at the end of the series, he spends it the whole time with however many virgins in the house, and then at the end to get them, he blows himself up in the finale.
I thought you were going to say the Palestinian version is just 40 women in burqas. You're like, how the fuck do I decide?
Well, that's what he does. The whole time. Just like the first 12 episodes, and then the 13th episode is he blows himself up.
Yeah. What would Palestinian Survivor look like?
Everyday life.
Palestine, yeah.
Just everyday life.
Standard everyday life.
Wow. All right, I think we've been racist enough here against Palestinians.
You know who else's propaganda game is really, really good? Marvel. Find out what we mean next in Reddit on Reddit.
Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way, EA Glow, Steam rocks, got Res for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit, mostly pics of felines, comma whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. Today I learned that Marvel has banned comic book writers from creating new X-Men or Fantastic Four characters, stopped X-Men and Fantastic Four merchandising, and canceled the Fantastic Four comic, all in order to spite Fox, who owns the movie rights. Now, I have one thing to say before we talk about this. Is this spite, or is this just good movie marketing?
I don't know. It seems more spitey to me. Not spidey, but spitey.
It's setting off your spidey sense?
My spitey sense, yeah. Because if they were really smart, they would allow this stuff, but they would make Fox pay them a fantastic royalty.
Yeah, I don't buy this story, to be honest with you. I don't buy it. I think there's probably a lot more at play here than what this person posted on Reddit. So I would wait.
The whole article they linked to, and I have evidence against you because I had the same thought you did. It seemed like a conspiracy theory. But here's the biggest piece of evidence. There's two. One, comic book covers for newer Marvel properties no longer have, like, joint properties where it's like all of the characters together. No longer have X-Men or Fantastic Four characters on them. And why have there never been X-Men movie action figures? This is the question that was in the article I read. Don't you think Fox would love to make Hugh Jackman Wolverine action figures? I would buy one.
That's true. I never thought about that. I stopped buying action figures when I was, 11.
Yeah.
So.
You should see my apartment.
not only do you have action figures, but you have like the 13-year-old girl action figures, the pop art things.
Those are awesome, dude. You take that back.
I didn't say they weren't awesome. I just said they had a certain demographic.
Well, they finally made a collection of figures that crosses properties, so I can get figures of all the characters I like and love and have them all look the same. So it satisfied the OCD in me.
I just got why you like them. Wow. You're so fucking OCD.
Hypervigilant.
Jesus. Oh, man. I didn't put that together.
And yeah, you want to know how bad I am? I'm looking at my Raj figure right now when it's turned, and I don't know why. It's bugging the crap out of me.
So yeah, I think this is just a big dick move on their part, but it's hurting them. Whatever. They could be making a ton of money off this.
Yeah, but aren't they doing it because they're trying to like get the properties back eventually, like they did with Spider-Man?
Yeah, I guess, but whatever. I don't know, fuck Marvel.
We're now in the fuck Marvel stage of the Marvel Universe. We're ahead of the curve here. Hopefully Batman versus Superman will make that the common parlance.
Yeah, come over to the DC side, people. Come on over. Arrow, The Flash, too good.
Next Reddit. And this is bracket serious. And it says, Redditors who had a lot of sexual partners, do you regret anything? Redditors who only had one partner, do you wish you had experimented more? Serious replies only. Because you're always going to get serious replies on Reddit.
Yes, of course. This is serious. This is maybe the most intimate question we've ever asked on the midside if we're going to answer personally.
We're channeling Loveline.
Loveline. Love that show. So, the only person I've ever been with is my fiance, and I don't particularly find that depressing or regretful in any way. Like, I understand intellectually that sex with other people would be different, but I'm fine with, like, I understand intellectually that it would be different, but I can't see that it would be in a capacity so different that there's something that I should regret about it. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe if I was younger, I would have chosen to do things differently because when I was in high school or college, I thought like sex before marriage was like the worst thing in the entire universe. And I wasn't even Christian, but I thought I would go to some atheist hell if I did it. And I would probably change that about myself.
What is atheist hell?
I think it's the DMV. It's
well,
just
no
having
one
getting laid
in the DMV. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would change that about myself, but I don't regret like when I was dating, not like I found Fiza fairly early in my dating phase. And so that's awesome.
Can't believe she stuck around. I mean,
I know.
So awesome.
Well, I think that's the greater point is, you know, they're asking about numbers basically. And I don't think the issue is numbers. I think the issue is people. And when you look back on the past, like you were saying, Daniel, it's not that so much I wish I could have slept with more people. It's not like, oh man, my number's 2. I wish my number was higher. It's more, there were people that I feel like if I was better equipped socially, I could have connected with better. And maybe that could have been a connection on a physical level as well, if it was able to get there. And that's something I could have possibly enjoyed with those specific women or girls, because I was younger, so they were girls.
Yeah.
Rather than numbers. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Quality, definitely.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I mean, over this weekend, like, I don't know if you guys don't know, like, in Orlando, Gay Days was over the weekend. And yesterday, I went to Magic Kingdom with my little red shirt.
Is that where everyone gets confused because there are gays? Did I make that joke last week?
No,
like
not.
Gay Days, gay. Like D-A-Z-E?
Yeah.
Really? That's the joke you went for there?
Yeah.
You went for a terrible pun?
You know, have you not noticed what I do on this podcast?
Okay. All right, just making sure.
I went to a party last night, actually. It was totally last minute.
You're losing your virginity story? Is that what this is?
No, I'm actually illustrating your point, sir.
Oh, then continue, please.
Okay. So when you go to these kind of parties, it was a pool party, you know, it was private security, and the whole hotel was pretty much filled with, you know, gay men. And there were things going on pretty much all around. I mainly stayed in the pool because, yeah, I wasn't about that. But, you know, like in the hot tub and other places, there were things going on. And I realized, you know, that when you look at their faces, at the people participating, there's not a lot of enjoyment of the moment or the activity. It's more, they had this drugged out kind of look in their eyes, like, it was more about the high rather than the experience with the person. And that really set in stone with me, you know, cause we all struggle with our sexual ethics. We all struggle with, like putting it together and kind of understanding not just sexuality in and of itself, but how we feel about it. And I think it was a very good night for me because I finally understood more clearly, about how I view sex. And I think Justin's absolutely 100% correct. It's not about numbers. It's not about the number of the experiences that you have. It matters with whom you were doing these things with, whom you sleep with. It's really important because that's what the true measurement of success is.
By the way, props on the proper use of whom.
You are one of maybe six people to date who's figured it out.
It's very simple. Who is the subject? Whom is the object? There you go.
Okay, you're two of six.
Damn it, I wanted to be seven of nine.
Together we are one third of all people who have figured it out. No, you wanted to do seven of nine, not yes. Be seven of nine. Yeah, just putting that.
All right, I think that sums up that Reddit. Anyone else have anything else to add?
No. Sex is good.
What advice do you all have for an incoming college freshman?
You're there to learn shit. Don't forget that. I mean, honestly, I would tell many more freshmen, not just the simple thing of like, you need to go to class, like this is expensive and paying for it, but like, the whole point of you being there is honestly to give you some sort of knowledge to make you successful later in life. And so if you're not getting that in your classroom, get it outside of your classroom. Do anything you have to learn something, whatever it is. So.
Sort of a cognate of that is all of these myths you hear about college come from the fact that people are prioritizing what goes on outside of the classroom over what goes on inside of the classroom, or more broadly, like Daniel's saying, they're prioritizing, what would we say? We'll go back to the emotion story, and they're prioritizing emotions over intellect. Could we say that?
Yeah, a lot of like, well, I want to hang out with people, and I want to feel like I'm an adult, and I want to, you know, feel what it's like to be part of this, you know, fraternity ookie cookie party, you know, or whatever it is.
Right. So, yeah. Make sure you're still living a healthy lifestyle even though you're in college. Intellectually, as Daniel's saying, but also physically. The freshman 15 comes from the fact that most people in high school live active lives, and then they go to college, they live more sedentary lives, and they drink a lot. So if you're, as Daniel's saying, trying to take control of your life and being smart about it and learning it and be healthy, things like the freshman 15 won't affect you.
Yeah.
Right. You guys want to hear my answer?
Absolutely.
No.
Okay. It might insult you, and I apologize.
Were you going to say don't go to college?
Yeah, I was going to say don't go to college.
Why would that insult me?
I didn't go to college, and every year I feel more validated in that choice. I went straight to work for Disney. Always kind of at the start with the intention of, oh, I'll go later. But honestly, the way things are right now, if you're just now coming into college, chances are you're probably going to be saddled with a debt that you're never going to be able to pay off. You're not going to get the education that you think you're going to get. You're going to show up to class like some of my friends did I was working and they were paying for classes in college and their professors wouldn't show up because they were at some protest on some dock somewhere trying to protect some animal that they'd never even heard of. Honestly, if you can go to like a trade school or if you can look for some kind of an apprenticeship or an internship somewhere, you know, that's in the field of what you want to do that. if you're a performer, if you're a musician or an actor, if you want to, if you can get to a conservatory like Juilliard, someplace that really doesn't require the basic, the other college stuff, the liberal arts, base that other degrees will have if you go to a four-year university, if you can specialize and focus strictly on what you want to do, then I think that's a better route. Otherwise, just get your ass to work. Get a job and work. And sure, you might not be making the same amount of money that some college graduates will make in the future, but I honestly think you could probably get a lot more and you will come out ahead in the end because you won't be saddled with all this debt that you can, that you're going to have to pay for, even if you're not working in the field that you studied for.
I don't even know if your statement about you'll be making less than those college graduates is true nowadays with so many people getting degrees. I agree completely with what you said. You know, if you know what you want to do, you're better off at 18 years old just going and doing it and learning as much as possible. Because in those 4 years, you're going to have learned to do exactly what you want to do with your life, whereas those other kids after 4 years are going to be starting from the beginning. If I could go back and do it again and knew I wanted to be a TV writer, I would have figured out how to do that right away and started working towards it rather than even now I'm just at the beginning and just getting there. I mean, I have the skill set, but then there's also the whole side of learning the industry and learning the people and you know, getting your way into that. So you're missing out on that opportunity where you're basically living on an island when you're in college. You're away from the rest of the world.
Yeah. If you are in college right now or going into college, and you are intent on staying there and not dropping out, even though we all think you should, you should either study coding of some sort or petroleum engineering and nothing else. Fuck all the liberal arts. Seriously.
Yeah, then honestly, they're not even going to give you a good writing education. My writing education was read this article, discuss it, and we discussed it in class, and then we had to write a paper on it. Nowhere did anyone give me any sort of principles of writing. I had to induce all of it myself. And I didn't even realize I was inducing it until I got older, and I was like, oh, wow, I actually know what I'm doing. But it was never any sort of instruction as to this is specifically how you write. These are the principles.
Yeah.
If you're a musician, you get a better education grabbing your guitar and going to Austin for a year or Nashville and working in a coffee shop during the day and just getting gigs around this. So you will learn a lot more and gain a lot more experience and probably maybe fast track a musical career doing that than you would studying guitar in a 4-year university in addition to a bunch of other classes that frankly may have nothing to do with what you want to do.
And as a trans artist myself, who is not living the life he feels on the inside, there's nothing wrong with culturally or practically in your life. I don't know why I said culturally. There's nothing wrong with practically taking a job to pay the rent while you're trying to learn about your profession and perfect your art and perfect your craft. There is a difference for a lot of us between a career and a job. And it's okay to take a job, and there's nothing shameful about that. You know, we see a lot of this, you know, we see it especially in the dating world. Oh, I want to date a banker. I want to date a businessman. I want to date someone with six figures. But there's nothing wrong. A truly rational person will understand that. There's nothing wrong with taking a job that makes less money that enables you to try and do everything else you want with your life.
Exactly. Carpe diem. Fish the day.
All right. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I've learned that only liberal professors care about their students. But even the students they care about might turn around and knife them in the back someday. So that's what you get, you fucking liberals.
Elliot?
I learned that Justin does the podcast in his skivvies and nothing else.
Thanks for reminding me.
I suppose Elliot would have been the one to latch onto that.
Yeah.
I jettisoned that knowledge immediately.
I had forgot I said that until you said that.
What did you learn this week, Justin?
I learned that I'm trans wealthy, and the world needs to help me actualize who I am on the inside. No longer do I want to live feeling this way, feeling unrecognized and feeling oppressed and looked down upon. I am trans wealthy, and the world owes it to me for that to be reality and not the reality I'm currently living in.
And if you're trans wealthy, trans-abled or transgender or trans-normal, why don't you go ahead and tell us all about that on our Facebook page. facebook.com/midside. Then after that, you can go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating because we are the trans number one podcast.
Yeah, what trans are you? People, it's too long. Too long have we lived in the shadows. Just tell the world what you really feel on the inside, and the world will make it happen. They have to. Let us know what trans you are. Maybe you're the transitive property of equality.
Maybe you're Trans Am.
Let us know what transpires.
5 stars, iTunes. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your dog. Everyone, listen to the Midside. Peace.
I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
Welcome to the Midside, where we podcast without pants. Seriously, I'm not wearing any pants right now. Okay, who vibrated?
What?
I just heard a vibration.
Oh, it looks like it was me. I didn't even hear it.
Come on, man!
It's the vibrator.
Hypervigilance. She drives me nuts. Like, when somebody kept getting emails for like a month of the podcast.
I just got invited to Sadie's birthday party.
Is it a Sadie
by
Hawkins
Mariana? This is a not that D. Richards email.
Oh, okay.